Welcome to the Real Estate Investor Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Lipsky of Break of Day Capital. I talk to leading experts to discuss a wide range of subjects to educate investors on best-in-class practices to build legacy wealth and positively impact communities. Let's jump in. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Investor Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Lipsky with Break of Day Capital. Be sure to join our Facebook group, Asset Management Mastery, where we have a great community of thousands of like-minded individuals sharing resources and best practices. Hey, everyone. We have launched the BODC Multifamily Impact Fund. Invest with a trusted operator with a track record of success. Our fund offers diversification, risk mitigation, tax benefits, and stringent acquisition criteria. If you'd like to learn more, head over to our website at breakofdaycapital.com.
Choosing the right insurance coverage for multifamily properties isn't that complicated, if you know who to talk to. At the Garzella Group, we're uniquely qualified to help you navigate the range of policy choices you have, and we're committed to saving you 30% in the process. We do intensive market research and have nationwide relationships, so we can find coverage other insurance brokers simply can't. We should talk. Go to quotenow.biz and we'll start the conversation.
Today on the podcast, we have my friend Peter McKernan. Peter is an investor and real estate agent in Southern California. Peter holds a BS in business management from Cal State University in Long Beach and is a former firefighter. Thanks for joining us, Peter. Can you start by telling the listeners a little bit more about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, Gary, dude, I appreciate it, man. For one, just coming on the podcast and being able to chat with you a little bit more. I know we've become friends over the last year and a half, so I appreciate it. Yeah, so I was a fireman, and the story goes on the fireman route was, you know, I finished out my training and then, you know, hit the ground running and got bored and figured like, hey, I should get a bachelor's degree. And so that's Long Beach State. And then once I finished that, it was, okay, what's on the next horizon? And I had a little bit of cash and ended up buying a place in Redlands, California. So where I grew up, about an hour east where I live now. And that cash flow day one, granted, it was at the time 2013. So it was a lot easier to find deals as a lot of people, you know, the scenario goes as rates were a little bit lower then. And also people are still worried about what happened in 2008. There wasn't as many people jumping in. So the numbers were still, you know, fairly good. But I ended up getting that one in 2013, that rental property, and kind of pushed forward, had some downtime at work and continued on the path of buying some real estate. And then also got my real estate license as I continued to look at other investments. Started helping some people out for residential real estate and realized that was also a business too. I got my license thinking that I was, you know, just going to be that, just have my license and everybody was going to know about me and I was going to maybe do some deals, but at the same time, save some money on the purchase. But quickly realized that no one knows who you are until you actually start marketing yourself and having conversations with people and digging in deeper and deeper on running a business. And that goes, you know, twofold with real estate investing and also running a team. But throughout that whole time, I was, you know, building the portfolio and then also running a team and working as a fireman.
Let's talk about that first deal. I assume you were fairly young at the time. How old were you?
I think I was 27, I think, when I got it. Quick background. I got a buddy that I own that with. Actually, I still own it today. And the tenant reached out to me yesterday. She's been in there for 10, almost 11 years. Said she's going to move out. So, but we were going to buy like a condo in Orange County together and just do like a kind of a house hack thing. And then realized, you know, there was still somewhat of a cash flow scenario in Redlands. So we bought that as a non-owner occupied, 20% down, split the down payment, and then didn't do much to it at all, really. And then just had the person move in and it cash flowed on day one. Granted, I didn't know how to run numbers. I didn't know what numbers were. I was just like the rent and then the mortgage. And that makes sense.
So did you have a big fear? I think a lot of people have this fear on their first investment, whether it's passive or active. Getting over that hump is really hard. What helped you get over that hump, particularly at a pretty young age?
Yeah, I don't think I had so much. And honestly, it was probably ignorance or lack of knowledge that like really helped me out, because I didn't really have like what could go wrong. I mean, the liability was like $500 each, because I think the mortgage at the time was $1,300, or you know, maybe it was like $650 each or $750 each or something like that. So I wasn't, and I could share the burden with the partner, right? So like if she moved out immediately, I could share the burden. So I wasn't too worried. And I was still, I had a good income from the fire department. So it was like, if something went wrong, we can hold that and still absorb the cost and then find somebody else to move in. So there wasn't too much fear, but like I said, it was more so, you know, ignorance versus anything else. Like we didn't do CapEx, you know, how much would a roof cost? How much would an AC cost? It was like, just move her in and then, you know, we'll kind of figure it out from there.
I know about that. I've gone into a bunch of different businesses and people are like, how did you do it? I'm like, part of it was ignorance, just like diving in and not worrying about all the noise and just trying to make something happen. And kudos to you and your buddy. I think also work doing it with someone else helps, you know, at least, you know, because you can, it's like, does this look good to you? Does it, you know, like, and having that like gets momentum, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Because we quickly afterwards, you look at us like a dual income kind of, you know, scenario. So the next one we bought together was, you know, less than a year after, and it was in the same, you know, same town, residential property. And it was fairly easy to do because it's like, okay, hey, we can mitigate risk because there's two of us versus, you know, just one of us. And that's how I looked at it. I think, you know, to your point, I think a lot of people do have that fear of jumping in because they fear that everything can go wrong. I mean, dude, you're one great example of like, hey, this is what we do on, you know, multifamily, and this is all the stuff and all the numbers that we need to be running from your experience and your pedigree that you've, you know, been able to do over the years. And the same thing with that. Like, I would say if you do have that fear, just bring someone in that has experience. And a lot of people don't like doing that either because they're like, well, I don't want to share equity or I don't want to share, you know, my profits, but you can, you know, really go a lot farther and feel a lot more comfortable when you have that mentorship or, you know, partnership. And that could be cut by so many different ways, you know, the deal finder or the money person or the project manager. And, you know, you may be sharing a couple of hats and the other person's sharing one.
That is great advice. I think so many people are worried or focused on what they can make on that first deal. And it's like, heck, if you come out even and learn a ton, particularly for someone that has a lot of experience, you're way ahead of the game. Leverage other people's experiences and you will get rich over time. But, you know, first couple of deals, like these are great learning opportunities. And if you can leverage other people's money, if you don't have it or experiences, then that is a great way to go.
Well, yeah, I think too, probably you've had some investors invested with you probably for the first time ever and then learned a lot. Like, you know, you walk every investor through all the stuff that you're doing and have them come visit the, you know, the site and stuff like that. Same thing, like they probably get a lot of experience and then they go out and do their first own deal after that type of scenario because they have more confidence and the ability to look at a property and say, okay, hey, this is what it's going to need, right?
That's what I did. When I started, I knew I wanted to get into the syndication game and I had my retirement money. So I invested in a bunch of other people's deals to see what they were doing right, what they were doing wrong. Certainly my learning curve really shot up when I just did my own deal. I was learning and seeing what they were doing. We do have investors that come on board. They're kind of beginning syndicators and now they're breaking off doing their own deals.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. Yeah. So, you know, we bought a few more and then, you know, continued on that path of a partnership. And then I've bought in more stuff, you know, with my wife and other partners outside of that and different entities. And really, it's being able to, I think too, like doing the partnership, especially early, makes you realize like who you can work with well. And then also like how that person's going to fit within the puzzle, right? Like, this person's going to get me from A to Z on this project. And then that's going to bring me up to a different level to be able to maybe, you know, you find a deal and that person's going to cut you in on equity of 20-30%. And you're going to take that equity and go move it to another property. I think too, a lot of people are, you know, afraid of partnering because they think they're going to get screwed really at the end of the day. And as long as you have someone looking over your shoulder as like an attorney or something like that, doing the due diligence on like an agreement, that's huge too, to make sure like, And that's another thing. Like, I think a lot of people are worried to pay attorney fees, and it's like, well, it's better to pay those up front versus paying $20,000, $30,000, $100,000 or getting stuck with the bag with nothing because that person, had a loophole in that agreement and they walked away with everything.
So like that really helped launch my real estate career because I was as an entrepreneur, I didn't want to have partners and I was thinking, oh, I have to go the slow route on building up my resume, but eventually changed my mindset and partnered with two other people and we bought a 42 unit. And then the next deal was 128 unit because we partnered with the right people. And it doesn't mean we have to stay with these people. It could have just been one deal. And some partners work for one deal and not for others. But as long as you are aligned as much as you can, certainly that could change down the road. And that's why having a good document really protects you. Then you could, figure out who do you want to continue being partners with down the road.
Yeah, 100%. And, you figure that out along the way, but also that, that gives you a good foundation to say like, hey, next time I don't want this, next time I want this. And, really protecting yourself is key, through those processes when you do have those partners.
I know you're working on an ADU. Talk about that because it's a very, and maybe I'm wrong, but a California-centric and thing that I think a lot of people across the U.S. don't really know too much about.
Yeah, it is for sure. It's definitely California specific. However, you could definitely do it in other states, granted, depending on the state's requirements and the local city jurisdiction. But you have mother-in-law's quarters or granny flats, however you want to call it, or casita. It's the same thing. But California back in 2017 basically said, hey, we want to start providing more housing to people. And this is a way we're going to do it. And then what happened was the cities, they had overlays that came in and they said, we're going to take this out. We're going to take this out. You need to have this for parking requirements and everything else, which basically limited that person that's going to go out there and do an ADU. Well, the state realized that and came in 2020 and said, we're going to have to have you abide by all the requirements here. And ultimately, it gave access to not only primary owners, but also secondary owners on putting those ADUs in. I think, building costs are very expensive. This minimizes or, lessens the building costs people are going to get hit with. So like, if you're building an ADU, you're not going to spend exactly the same amount as you would on a single family. You can minimize that and ultimately put you into a better ROI. And you can convert a garage standing still and end up doing that. On one of my rentals in Redlands, we bought it. It was 10,000 square foot lot. So it had a single family in front and then had two garages, one for the main house for that single family. And then there was a garage that was built like 25 years prior to us buying it that was, a normal 400 square foot garage. And it was facing an alley. So what I thought was, okay, well, the single family, it was almost 1,200 square feet. So it had a dining room. We converted that to a third bedroom. So we increased the rents fairly quickly on that. Instead of the rents being on that like 2,400, we're able to get 2,900 because we converted that dining room to a third bedroom. So it's a 3-1. They have a garage for themselves and they are able to, have it on that front facing street. And then the back is facing an alley, which we added 400 square feet onto that garage, and it's going to be a 2-1. We're going to finish it out here in about a month, and then that will get about 2,500 for the back. So, overall, we're looking at 5,400-ish on that. The rate's good on it. I mean, we bought it at a decent time, but also we're spending, I think, it's about $239 per square foot to build it all with everything. And then, I mean, Gary, you could probably speak to this a lot better than I, but building for, if you're in that area is probably going to cost me $300 to $350 easy for building a ground up house, probably more like $350. But if you get to the coastal cities, you're probably, especially like Newport or Manhattan Beach or, closer to the city, you're probably like $500 or $600 per square foot. You're half that, if not more, and you're able to put someone in there outside of the land value, you're at the 1% rule, if not greater.
Yeah, here you more than doubled your rent. So let's run the numbers if you're okay with it. How much did you buy the house? How much did you pay for the ADU? And now what is it roughly worth now?
Yeah, so all right, we bought for $431. Okay. Yeah. And then we spent 20 to do the front, and then we're spending 163 to do the ADU, plus we spent 13,000 on permits, and then another 9,000 on architect fees. So whatever that is.
I'll quickly do the math. 450, you know, 625 roughly.
So here's the thing that a lot of people say, like for ADUs, is like, well, they're not going to be the same outprice or ARV as a duplex. Well, that's right, because it's not a duplex. It's not zoned a duplex, and the appraiser's not going to give you that. But if you have solid comparables that are close within a mile range or radius, you still are able to provide that to the appraiser and say, Gary, hey, you know, you're going to appraise this property. This is what has sold, versus, you know, you just kind of shooting in the dark and saying like, hey, this is what the out price is. Well, there's one that sold price 6 to 8 months ago down the street from us. It was, our front house is 1200 square feet, 3-1. And then the back unit's going to be a 2-1, 800 square feet. Well, this one down the street, which was less than two blocks away, sold for 708. All right. And it had a 998 square foot front house, two bed, one bath. And then the back unit was about 600 square feet, 1-1. And it sold for 708. And the ADU was done 25, 30 years ago. So it's not new construction, which ours is going to be new construction. So I would, let's just go off like a very conservative number, issue ours to be roughly around 725 to 735 on an ARV, roughly. And we bought it, you know, that's still upside of roughly $100,000 after calculating and all the other stuff that we put into it.
Plus you're getting really good cash flow and leverage from the bank. And that's, you know, that's why real estate is so valuable. And you can get that bonus depreciation as well to, as a real estate professional, you can, you know, reduce your taxes. So many benefits to real estate investing.
100%. And you could do it for the single family. And then once you finish out the ADU, you can do another cost seg on the ADU as well.
Yep. Yep. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. And that on this one, what we could do is if we wanted to sell it, or what we could do is refinance it or take a HELOC out and make that money and go somewhere else and buy another rental with it.
Great ways to keep moving forward, keep growing that net worth. And it's just over time, just doubling down. And certainly that's what I did as well, to really, you know, 10x my net worth over a fairly short period of time because of these, you know, like constant little things to pull out money, invest. And certainly you've got, you know, there's that fine line everyone needs to understand their like risk reward, you know, how much risk they're willing to take and be able to sleep at night, because that's super important. But certainly there's tremendous upside in it.
Yeah. Well, what do you say specifically, you know, you deal with a lot of investors more than I do in the sense of like investing with you, especially the past couple of years, they go, dude, I know your returns are way better than this, but this has probably been an objection. I get 5 to 6% in a CD, and it's very conservative. It's very, non-risky. What do you say to that? Like for you specifically, because you have investors that you talk to all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we offer them an opportunity to make 15% return plus that. We've usually been that. I'd rather underpromise and overperform. It is a fixed asset. It is a hedge against inflation. So when you're making 5-6%, you're really making like half of that. You know, if inflation is going up, our value is going up. Our expense ratio is 35-40%. So all that extra income, that's inflating too. So that's a leverage. That's another advantage. Plus the tax benefits as well. Now, not everyone could take advantage of it right away, but they can carry it forward. And when we sell, it's minimizing their tax burden when we sell. So there's just so many more opportunities, and it's passive. So they're relying on a team of experts that do this full time, that have skin in the game, versus if you're working with a financial planner, a lot of them are just putting it into things that they're getting higher commission on too. So you just have to be careful of that. That's our pitch. You know, you've got hedge against inflation, a fixed asset, leverage, tax benefits. So it's just some people want to just stay in that, you know, and say, oh, we're waiting for a crash or this or that. And I get it. They're just ultra conservative and following the media, what the media is saying. But most of our investors are understand us, understand what we do, like our thesis, and want their money to work harder for them.
I get a lot of those objections because it's even more risky because, you know, I mean, they have me beside them, you know, like, hey, you should do this, this, and this. But at the same time, a lot of that is on their back. Like you take a lot of that and your team takes a lot of that. At the same time, it's like you look at the people that, you know, have a CD comparatively to the people that have, you know, even a single family owner, right? So the single family owner versus the renter's net worth at the end of, you know, 30 years is roughly like $9,000 to $16,000. And then if you look at someone that's owned a home over the years, this is averaged through the, you know, National Association of Realtors done this study, but over the nation, it's like $330,000 to $340,000 is the net worth from a single family residence. Well, extrapolate that over maybe just five rentals, and you don't have to live in California to have that, you know, appreciation. It could be somewhere else, Alabama. Your net worth is going to be way bigger. And then even if you just held tight and own those over the course of 30 years and slowly paid them off, you're going to be way better than just in a position where you just put money away in a 401k, 100%, or a CD and then moved it back to a 401k after you were done. So yeah, those things I think really provide people when you hear the people of like, you know, retire $3 million, $5 million, $10 million. They've done that and they haven't done anything crazy. You listen to Dave Ramsey, he's the most conservative guy out there. And granted, he does buy things just all cash, but just being conservative and having one strategy is really what I get out of Dave Ramsey, and sticking to it over a course of 30 years is going to get you a way better return of, you know, obviously having a little bit of risk there too.
Absolutely. What would be like the one thing you would do differently in your real estate journey? Like what would you tell yourself, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago?
Honestly, I loved being a fireman. I would probably say I'd started real estate at like 19 and grown it from there. But, you know, I had a great career as a fireman and that taught me a lot too. But I would say start as soon as you can. And I would say, you know, try to hold on to everything. And if you're not going to hold on to it, 1031 it really at the end of the day. Because, you know, looking back, you hear these stories of like, I think on Bigger Pockets, I heard a story of like someone bought something for like $60,000 on the Oregon coast and then their parents sold it. And then all of a sudden the person, they ran into them later down the road, 25, 30 years later, and they sold it for like $900,000. And then, you know, to that point, so a couple of guys I worked with the fire department, and their parents own places. And if no one's familiar with it, Spyglass Hill in Newport Beach, you can't touch anything for like less than $3 million or at least like 2.8. They sold the places in like the late 80s and early 80s. Both of these separate people didn't know each other, sold their places in Spyglass Hill, one for $280,000 and the other one for like $320,000 or $350,000. And now the places, like if they had just kept them, are worth $3 million, you know, plus. So you look at it and I would say buy real estate as much as you can, as often as you can, and hold it for as long as you can. That's what I would, have done, is started at 19 if I could.
Yeah, great advice. Me, I would, same thing. Start earlier, hold on. I had one of those properties too on the water and Weehawken overlooking downtown Manhattan, you know, but moved out to LA 26 years ago and needed that money. But man, yeah, wish it was worth well over 10x now, you know, but
yeah, hindsight's 2020, dude.
Well, Peter, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing your expertise and your real estate journey. Where can listeners find out more about you and work with you as a realtor and your podcast? So give a, you know, let the listeners know.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So you can find me on Instagram, Peter McKernan with a second N at the end. And then also you can search me on YouTube, just search Peter McKernan. Actually, my episode with Gary is on there as well. We had him on the podcast, and I also have a podcast as well, Real Estate Trends and Market Updates. And you can find me all on those platforms and reach out to me. We can definitely help you out. I run a team in Southern California of residential real estate agents.
Thanks again, Peter. I'm Gary Lipsky signing off. I'll be back next week with another informative episode on the Real Estate Investor Podcast.
To all of our listeners, thanks for joining us. And if you like this episode, please head over to iTunes or Stitcher and like, subscribe, and leave a review, as it will help us reach more people. And if you'd like to learn more about what we do at Break of Day Capital, head over to our website at breakofdaycapital.com and sign up for our newsletter and fill out our investor application. We'll talk to you next week.